How did the music come to be written for the Magic Christian album, and were you involved in the movie?
We were in a bit of a rut. We had this single out as The Ivies, Maybe Tomorrow, which everybody thought was going to be a big smash. Everybody around us and the band thought it was going to be a hit, you know. And it didn't really happen in England, and it got to 50 over here, so we sort of lost a lot of our confidence. We were still writing, but we were saying, no, that's not good enough, this is not good enough. And this went on for about 9 months. And McCartney came to us and he offered us to come and get it, you know. He'd been asked by Ringo to write the music for the film. He'd written this one song. He said, do a version of it. If the film company liked your version of it, then he'd be able to write a few more songs for the film. So we did it, they liked it, and we wrote Carry On and Rock of Ages.
Who did most of the orchestrated work on all five of your albums? Did a lot of it in the music of Magic Christian, and right up to the last one.
George Martin did the stuff on Carry On to Tomorrow, and a guy called Tony Visconti did the arrangements on Maybe Tomorrow and Dear Angie. And Bill, our road manager, played on one called Knocking Down Our Home. He got these five buskers. He turned these five proficient studio musicians into buskers. And don't know who they were, you know. But Bill was playing piano on that one. Highest point of his life, huh?
When you were in Liverpool, did you ever meet the Beatles or have anything to do with the Beatles? Did you know them before you got to Apple?
I used to watch them on the Cavern about 1961. Never knew them personally, though.
Is that perhaps why your music sounds a lot like the Beatle music?
Well, I think after the Beatles broke big, everyone was copying the Beatles, you know. It just happened that we were songwriters, and we'd been influenced by them like a lot of other people had been at that time, and it happened that we came out on Apple, and it happened that we had McCartney producing us. Well, obviously tends people to think that we might be a Beatle copying group, you know. We just did what we did from various influences that we had, you know, at the time. And if it turns out that way, you know, that us just being ourselves and like Beatles, well, you know, it's a great compliment.
I was just wondering if you had any feedback on what McCartney really is like as a musician.
I think he's a great musician, you know. Great singer, one of the best singers of the last decade, or whatever. You know, and I suppose he is very positive. Mm-hmm. And but he is talented and he knows it, you know. He's a very exuberant person, but a lot of fun. You know.
Right.
Don't see anything wrong with the guy.
How do you feel, Tom?
Pretty much the same.
Do you find that after getting to know the Beatles and meeting with them, that either of you found it, first of all, difficult to get to know them? Were they kind of on an ego, sort of, hi, I'm a Beatle, I'd look down on you type of thing? Were they doing that sort of thing to you, or were they just struck you as another human being, you know?
They're just other human beings, you know, who got involved and wrapped up with something that they created. And half the paranoia that goes around is from the people, you know, who, you know, would meet them and you know, not know what to say, etc. You know, it's not really their fault. Lennon's probably about the most eccentric of them. He is a bit strange, you know. But it's not to do with the Beatles. I think he's always been like that. You know?
How do you feel about that, Peter, when you met the Beatles?
Well, I was a bit awestruck, I suppose, in the beginning. Like anybody would be, but you just find out they're just normal human beings who happen to have a little more talent, maybe, than the average person in that direction, in the musical direction. Mm-hmm. And because of that, you know, they're made out to be gods, you know, but they're just human beings like you or I, you know, no different.
Could you describe the experiences you had in appearing in George Harrison's concert for Bangladesh? I think you were all in that, Reno.
Can you record Shaking?
You did one acoustic number in there. How did that come out? You did Here Comes the Sun with George, just acoustically though, without the drums.
Yeah. Well, he's a
said he'd like to try it, you know. We didn't really even rehearse it. He sort of showed me how it went, and I went back to the hotel room and listened to the tape a few times, you know. We just sort of half ran through it one day, you know. And actually, on the first show, the ending got messed up. The one they used was the second show.
I understand, Tom, you did some work with John Lennon on his Imagine album. What did this involve?
Joey and I played acoustics, you know. George was still into his acoustic trip, and he persuaded John to get us to go down and play for John, you know. John wasn't so keen on it as George was, you know. He said, "What's all that acoustic shit, man? I don't need all that. Making fairies playing the guitar." And we played on Jealous Guy, you know. He did it in about 3 takes. We just sang it live, you know. And we played on that, the one with the big long end on it. "I don't wanna be a soldier, I don't wanna die." That one.
Did you find Yoko was difficult to work with?
She was in bed. This was at 7:30 at night, incidentally. Keep strange hours.
Have any of you ever done any solo work other than the work you've done with the Beatles and with your own band?
I produced an English band once called Fat Grapple, because I have ambitions to be a producer eventually, you know. And I just thought I'd give it a try. It wasn't the type of group that I really liked, you know, so I took it on as a challenge, you know, to see, because they were all a bit too sure of what they wanted before they'd ever been in the recording studio, you know. And they created a lot of time problems and run up quite a high bill. The record company threw them out.
So they never did get anything on disc?
No, they didn't.
What type of music influences each member of the band?
I don't think you can put that into a category. You know, there's different... We all like different music, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I might like one song by one artist and I won't like another song that he does, you know. I can't really say I just like this band or that band. It's just like music that I like. It could be anybody. There's not a lot of artists that really knock me out. Stevie Wonder does. I think he's really good, you know. But not a lot turns me on.
Mm-hmm. How's the rock and roll nostalgia over there? Is it really big over there, or is it, you know?
It's quite big. I don't understand the scene over there. It's like a new generation to me now. You know? It's just really weird. It's really into the glitter and the makeup and, I don't know, just being as nutty as you can.
Well, Ringo's sort of taken that step in his Photograph album with You're 16 and... That's going back.
I really like that album. A lot of the groups that have come out recently in England, you know, I just don't understand. You know, they don't do anything for me at all. Mm-hmm. But they get hits, you know.
Making
which is a sign of the times, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm a Frank Sinatra now.
You said you're writing a song right here in the hotel room. Is it difficult to write tunes while on the road? How do you get your lyrics and so on?
I find it difficult to write on the road. I think you need the road to give you contact with life, you know, and to give you ideas for songs, but I like to go home and write normal. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever try to get any obscure meanings into your lyrics? Hidden meanings?
Sometimes they come. Sometimes I can write a song and not really know what it means myself. You know, it's just sort of individual feelings that come into my head, you know, and you usually find that it gets a certain meaning for you and for everybody after a while.
Do you try and hit the audience with a really different type of psychological hit, you know, so they'll not just listen to the music, but listen to the words also and sort of communicate something within their heads?
Yeah, with some songs, you know, if you've got strong feelings on a subject, you can, you know, maybe try and get those across, you know. But you usually end up writing about what's happening to you and how you feel at that particular time in life, you know. Mm-hmm.
So
So if you're in a bit of a downer stage in life, you get downer songs, and if you're really bubbling over, you get good old happy rockers.
You released the Ass album, which was the last one for Capitol and Apple. That particular album shows quite a significant change in your musical direction, in that it's a lot heavier and probably more progressive than the earlier commercial type tunes. Is this the direction you wanted to go?
Well, not so much heavier. We just want to get feel into things if we can, you know, because a lot of the albums that we've done, we've taken a few months off before recording, you know, to try and write songs or just be plain lazy or whatever, you know, and you find you go into the studio and you've lost the feel for playing together as a group as you would on stage. So you tend to come out with a studio type album which has maybe a bit too much overdubbing on it and not enough basic feel. So now that's why we're going straight to Colorado, to try and maintain the feel that we've got between ourselves on stage and just get something down with that feel in the studio. So we thought it would be a good excuse to try this place. A lot of people said it's a good studio, and you can get, it's really out in the wild, you can get away from everything. Just concentrate on your music.
On your last two albums, if you talk about those for a minute, the Ass album, what songs from that album did you write which have most meaning to you or that are interesting?
On Ass?
Mm-hmm.
The one that's got the most meaning for me is the one called When I Say, which is a slow love song, because it's, you know, it's about my wife, you know. But the other one, there's only two I wrote on it anyway. The other one I like because it says a little bit about some of the things that have happened to us in our travels, you know. It's a bit more of a controversial type song. Controversial, you know, whatever they used to call that kind of thing. It's like a protest song, man.
Can you give me some description of the background of your new album? There's a track toward the end of it where someone is walking and street noises, it sounds like.
Hey, man,
yeah,
there's a story to that, man.
Sony.
I just purchased a Sony tape recorder at the shop and was testing it. Walking back to the studio and we got this really freaky producer, and he was a bit mad. And he blew his mind, this tape recorder of me walking up the stairs. Didn't know I was that talented. So he used it.
What type of drums were used in the African rhythm type of thing on the new album? I assume they were like a metal drum, are they not?
Yeah, they were a band called The Flames, you know, they play at a restaurant quite near the studio, and the producer happened to know them, you know. And we needed an instrumental section for that particular song. And everyone envisaged a steel drum thing, but and it so happened that the producer knew of this trio playing in this restaurant, and he just nipped out and he brought them back in the studio, you know. Just put it on.
You mentioned you're going to work on a new album following this tour. What type of songs will be included in this, and what do you think you'll call it?
As for type of songs, I don't really know, because half of them are not written yet. You know, it's just what I said earlier. I think we're just trying to get a better feel on it, you know, a feel, a live feel to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we're going straight off stage into the studio, so we can maintain that feel that we've got between us on stage. You know. We don't plan to do a completely live album. We just like to get less overdubbing on the album, you know. So the basic thing is there, the basic feel is there, just with the group, and as little overdubbing as possible.
Will you still be working with Chris Thomas?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who else has he worked with? How did you get in contact with him as producer?
He's worked with Procol Harum, and remixed some stuff for Pink Floyd. We tried to produce Ass ourselves, initially. And we needed somebody to save the day. So, because we weren't all that experienced at it, you know.
Do you think there's a really good ear around the world for good producers?
Well, the thing is, everybody hears it differently, you know. I mean, everybody's idea of a good production is different, you know. And that was one of the problems with the group trying to produce itself, because it had four different opinions, you know, and you could never get one thing over. It was always like a combination, which didn't really make it. So we just had to get somebody from the outside with that ear to say, well, you know, hold it, you know, you're going a bit nuts there, you know, let's just do it like this, you know. I think there is a need for good producers. Yeah.
There were some rumors going on earlier this year that Badfinger were breaking up. Was there any basis to that?
We're always breaking up.
Regularly, nightly, we got stains.
I know, I leave five times a year, and Tommy leaves three times a year.
Ten.
No, we have our fights, we have our ups and downs like anybody else. You know. But
we're going in for the new record, the longest band to stay together.
Yeah.
How long has the band been together now?
It's about 1947.
You were doing Beatle tunes in 47.
Oh yeah, we were the first, we originated the Beatles song, you know.
I'm sure you're asked this all the time. You get a crowd, it's really rowdy. Do you care? Do you just go out, play, hope that they get something out of it, and then tour on to someplace else?
I think we probably take feedback from the audience a little too much to heart, you know. if they give us a bad time, which hasn't happened much, thank God, but if they do, then... we're not the most professional of bands, you know. It does get to us, I think. It's maybe easier on this tour, because on the previous tours we've done like a few piano numbers and a few acoustic numbers, you know, which really needed a bit of help from the audience in just keeping quiet, especially with the acoustic numbers. But on this tour we're doing an all electric set, you know. So if they make a little bit of noise, then that's cool, you know.
You can always turn on amplifiers.
Where do you get together to rehearse, and how often do you see each other when you're not touring?
We have this place in Denmark Street, Timpan Alley, you know. It's a small little shack in the back of the music publisher's place. And we rehearse down there. And we see each other generally in the pub when we're not working.
You mentioned the pub. What else do you enjoy doing when you're not involved with music?
Drinking.
And then? Drinking again.
Oh, I can go to sleep then.
Drinking and taking Alka-Seltzer.
Now, it's been a fairly full-time time occupation just of late, you know. And it will be for the next 6 months or so, you know, because we do this album and then we go back to England and do a tour of Europe. And then we're going to go to Australia and Japan. And then we might just have Christmas off. You know.
What do you think we can look forward to in the future from Badfinger?
A good album, I hope. And a hit. Please?
You think, are you planning to release a single from the new album?
I think so. Have they released that?
One released last Thursday.
Great
inside.
Well, unless there's anything else you'd like to add, I'd like to thank you very much, Tom and Peter.
Thank you.
Interesting interview.